This is International Insights, conversations with experts and entrepreneurs on principles of management and leadership, produced by Dr. Joe Shkembri from the Faculty of Economics, Management and Accountancy.
Welcome to International Insights, stories from the real economy. My name is Joe Shkembri. In international entrepreneurship, decisions are taken partly based on information, but partly because an entrepreneur can see an opportunity which others cannot see. In this conversation with Winston Zara Jr., we talk about decisions, their decision to grow their small travel company many years ago, their commitment to invest in new and large hotels, and likewise the decision to sell the business they had practically lived for. We explore the impact of a leader's personal life on his decisions, and how sport and personal tragedy changed his perspective on life and the way to lead an organization. Today we're very lucky to have with us Winston Zara. Winston, thank you very much for accepting to do this.
Thank you.
First of all, you obviously have a very interesting story in the sense that not only did you build a company in Malta, and that's the part which people probably know and know about you, but at the same time, more recently, you are building a very interesting international project, this time in the UK. I'd like to start actually with that, you know, chapter, and then we'll start moving back from there.
At least I can remember that, because it's recent.
It's easy.
Yes, I mean, as you said, my career was mainly in Malta. I mean, you said I built a company. The company was built by many people, not by me. I was privileged to lead it for many years after my father handed over. But then when we sold in 2015, I spent another 2 years with the company. We sold to the Corinthia Group. Once that integration was done, then I decided to set up something new in the UK. And as you said, most recently we opened the Stock Exchange Hotel, which is a boutique hotel right in the center of Manchester. It's a beautiful building, lots of history, lots of heritage. It's a 1906 building. It was the Stock Exchange when Manchester was very much a financial center in the UK. So again, it's been a privilege to be able to look at that building, convert it, honor its past, but give something back to the city by creating a product within it that fits today's market, basically.
But and how did that come about? You were kind of, you know, not retired, I would say, but you retired a bit from Malta. How did the opportunity come about for something so, you know, innovative and interesting?
So the opportunity came about in an interesting way. When we went public with Island Hotels Group in 2009, two individuals who came into the group at that point in time, I would say nearly by chance, were the footballers, the ex-footballers, Gary Neville and Ryan Giggs. Man United players. They were here on the island a couple of months before celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Manchester United Supporters Club in Malta. We got talking, we were doing the catering for that event, one thing led to another. Before I knew it, they had invested as part of the public offering. Gary sat on our board for 6-7 years. So we got to know each other, we got quite close, we became good friends. And when I told him I was retiring, after he finished laughing, because he spent a good 5 minutes laughing, he said, look, we'd like to do something in the UK. Would you be interested in coming over, having a chat? I went over in January 18, a bit before actually, end of 2017. We had a chat, I looked at the company they already had. We agreed on a restructuring program. Before you know it, I ended up investing. We became partners over there. I became CEO of the company, and we started growing it. In fact, today we have two hotels: Hotel Football, which is a 4-star property right opposite Old Trafford. It's a very specific product, but very good fun. literally 4 months before COVID kicked off, I would say somewhat traditional for us, because there's always something going on.
It has happened before, yes.
I'll tell you the story later. We opened Stock Exchange 15th November 2019. Obviously then COVID hit, and we've been dealing with that
We'll deal with the crisis of COVID later on. I want to first take you back a little bit. You, like you said, kind of founded, you had a small family business, but you and your father decided at one point in time, I guess, to, you know, make it bigger. There were a couple of milestones, I imagine, where you went from a small company to a much larger presence in Malta.
Look, it's not, you don't really wake up one morning and say, I'm going to make something bigger. Mm-hmm. My father had went into business before I was born in 1969. He had been a teacher for 15 years, and then he went into business with his brother, with Alpine Group. Then they opened the Riza Apart Hotel in 1979. I was 9 years old at the time, and I remember very, very specifically standing at the opening of that hotel thinking, this is what I want to do.
Okay.
You know, it was sort of love at first sight, okay, with hotels, if you like. Then my father retired in 1985, lasted a few months, not more. In fact, to an extent, I'm kind of repeating history here. And in 1987, he went into partnership at the Bujibba Holiday Complex, and that was the birth of Island Hotels Group. I then came back from the UK in 91.
You were studying there? Okay.
I was reading for a hotel and catering management degree at the time. And then we started Island Caterers, and then in 94 the Coastline, and then the two Radissons, and one thing led to another. Okay. But you don't really sit there in 1987 or 91 and think, you know, I want to build something massive. It happens organically, it starts to roll. You take a few risks along the way, some big risks along the way. You have a few sleepless nights along the way. My father drove it very hard. I think the way we both describe it, we had a sort of 25 years of Island hotels, and he very much drove the first 10 years.
Okay.
We did the middle five very much together, and I drove the latter 10. But always, I think we very often came at things from a slightly different angle.
Okay. Okay.
The objective was 9 times out of 10 the same objective. The path that we got to that objective was always a little bit different. We agreed to disagree on a couple of occasions, but on the big things, I think we were always in sync. We were always on the same wavelength. And yes, you do sit there sometimes and say, look, I think probably the Golden Sands was one of the biggest ones, because...
Biggest decision, you mean? Or?
It was a big decision, because I mentioned Stock Exchange and COVID. We bought Golden Sands a couple of months after September 11th.
Okay.
Which, to be honest, even looking back today, was a massive risk and was... you know, part crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It was also going to be a 4-star hotel, and literally overnight we took a decision to increase the investment from a 10 million euro investment to an 85 million euro investment.
Okay. Okay.
We tried to kid ourselves and call it a 60 million euro investment, knowing full well it was going to be bigger.
Okay.
So this is why I'm saying, you sometimes, if you overthink how big something is going to be, it could scare you off. So I think psychologically, we played it down a bit in our minds, just to
have a degree of comfort,
to remain with our feet on the ground and keep control. And I think that psychologically helps.
Okay.
It was the same when I decided to go to the UK. You know, if you start overthinking it, or going into too much detail, what if this, what if that, what if the other, then you end up stagnating and doing nothing. So I think you have to think. You have to think clearly, you have to have a plan, you have to have an objective, but then you have to jump. You can't sit around thinking forever.
And continue analyzing it.
Then it doesn't happen.
Exactly. In fact, this is an interesting conversation we've had with other entrepreneurs as well. This balance between, you know, planning and doing, and, you know, scenarios and all that, and actually, you know, kind of going for it. You seem to make it sound very easy.
I wouldn't say it's easy, I wouldn't say it's difficult, I would say it's a state of mind.
Right.
If you wake up every morning and you're in a state of mind of procrastination,
right,
then you're going to procrastinate and procrastinate, and you just don't get it done. You have to take a decision. Ultimately, you have to take a decision, either to do it or not to do it.
Exactly.
And
but based on facts, no? And there's, you, this is where you usually draw the line. To what extent do you continue getting facts?
You need to know what you're doing. I think one of the principles I abide to is stick to your onions, I think the expression is, you know, stick to what you know.
Which is what you've done over time, I think.
Yes,
broadly.
And to be honest, every time I've diverted and dabbled in other things, I've got burnt.
Okay.
So I always seem to veer back to hotels, and hotels even more than catering. One, I love it. I enjoy it. You know,
which is very important.
It's a passion for me. And two, because I mean, over the years, you get reasonably good at it.
Exactly.
And what you get more good at is choosing the right people around you.
Okay.
Because, like I said earlier, you're privileged to lead an organization, and I genuinely feel it is a privilege. But the reality is, you have such a team of people doing the work. You know, with Island Hotels Group, at one point we had over 1,500 people.
Okay.
Each of those people had a role, an important role, a crucial role, and were as important as myself, who was CEO, if not more so, because very often they were on the front line. They were delivering the service to our guests,
interfacing with guests all the time.
And you know, if they made a mistake, it showed up much more.
Exactly.
My mistakes would show up on the balance sheet. Their mistakes would
have an immediate impact.
It's
interesting you're mentioning people and the role of people. But is it? I guess, you know, was it easier to recruit the right people and train the right people later on in the journey than earlier on?
I'll say no, because the situation changed.
Okay.
And to be honest, it was one of the main drivers that led us to decide to sell the company in 2015.
Okay.
We always worked with Maltese.
Okay.
The Maltese work ethic is extremely strong.
Okay.
And more than that, when tourist comes to Malta, they want to experience
something
Maltese
authentic.
Hospitality, which is authentic, which is genuine. In fact, the tagline of our company was "The difference is genuine," with an emphasis on the genuinity. At a very fast pace, we went from all Maltese to having over 29 nationalities working within the company, and the dynamic was changing.
Okay.
The dynamic of the industry was changing, the dynamic of the workforce was changing, so it did become more difficult.
Right.
It became more difficult to offer something that I was very proud of, which was that Maltese hospitality in a very, very genuine way. And the industry has come leaps and bounds in other areas.
Okay.
You know, if you look around, the industry has improved dramatically in some areas as well. But I had come to a point where I stopped enjoying it locally, and I had always told Gabby, my wife, who's, you know, been an incredible support over the years, you have to be with hotels because you're kind of you're married to the hotels as much as you're married to your wife. Gabby would say probably more so sometimes. And I had always thought that if I stop enjoying it, if you ever hear me tell you I'm not enjoying it, pull me back and make sure I take the right decision. And that decision was taken in 2015, but really executed fully in 2017.
How did that come about? That's obviously a major milestone for you. You're giving us some kind of background as to, you know, how that happened. But
it's an absolute major milestone, not only from a company perspective, also from a personal perspective, because we were very much a family company. We were very much a family. You try and get to know all the team members as much as possible, their families. Okay, it gets more difficult as the company grows
but
once you're locally based and you can go around the properties and meet the individuals, then it's I wouldn't say easy to do, but if you want to do it, you can do it. So it there was a very personal connection as well. So it wasn't only a change from a work company perspective, but also on a personal level. Also on a personal level, because, you know, one minute you're going 12, 14, 15, 16 hours a day, sometimes a couple of days in a row, full on. And suddenly you're like, wait a minute, what's happening? You know, you're waking up. And again, that was part of the decision. I decided to, you know, have and entertain the conversation with Gary and his team in the UK. Yeah. And that excited me again. It kind of reignited the passion. It was still hospitality, but different country, different setup. In a country where you know no one.
Yes, yes.
In Malta, rightly, wrongly, for better, for worse, it's easy to pick up the phone and call. I mean, frankly, even if you want to call the president, somehow you can call the president or whoever's heading whichever authority or whichever ministry. It's easy. In England, forget it. Okay. I mean, first of all,
you've felt this change in that landscape?
Absolutely. In Malta, you know, over the years, because of the business, you get a certain exposure, people know you. It's easy if you pick up the phone and call someone and you say who you are and you're going to get a response. In England, I can make 100 phone calls. I say it's Winston Zara, they say, and who? You know, you really, the challenge for me was starting in a way from scratch again and building up. And that takes a bit of time. Today, 3 years later, because we've achieved certain milestones in the UK, now we're having conversations at a slightly different level, and things are gaining
because
momentum.
Because you're part of the network there as well, I guess.
Build up a new network. It takes time. You have to invest in it.
Right.
Invest in it, not financially. Mm-hmm. Invest in it
time.
Mm-hmm. You have to be patient. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of perseverance. The holding company is called Relentless.
Okay.
And that somewhat
sums up
what we are. There's also that winning mentality, obviously, with Gary Ryan playing for Manchester United all those years. You say, what does football or sport have to do with business? To me, the crossover between sport and business is immense. That winning mentality, that fighting mentality, that fighting till the end, that, you know, it's not over until it's until the final whistle blows, or until you've ran the last 5 centimeters of a race, and that's the same approach we have in the business. And I would say since I've gone to the UK, that's been heightened somewhat. So in Malta we were, you know, that persistence, that hard work, that never say die, no matter what happens, was always there. It has to be there. If you don't have that fire in your belly, you can't do it. I don't think you can do it. But in the UK, because I've been working so closely with someone like Gary, you see a different...
Okay.
He comes at it from a very different angle. Even when he sat on our board here, the type of questions he would ask were very different.
Tell me how, because I see the sport analogy, but kind of the spirit.
We had a great board made up of different individuals, the ex-governor of the central bank, one of the founding partners of PwC, great people. Okay. Keep in mind, as a family, we owned 75% of the company.
Okay.
When I set up the board of the PLC, I set it up with a non-family majority. Okay. So we're 7 members, only 3 family, and 4 non-executive, non-family directors. So forget the family company situation. We took it to a completely different dimension.
Consciously switched it on to a professional board.
Completely. And that made a big difference as well. And all very valid individuals. But Gary used to come up with questions which were completely... I would call them boomerang questions because he'd literally throw them out of the blouse.
Where did that come from?
But they were questions that made you reflect, made you think in a very different way. And this is what happened in the UK. You know, we'd be discussing things and he goes, no, but what if we do it this way? At first you think, in fact, he now very often starts with, I know you might think this is crazy, but, and it's true, your first reaction is, this is a bit crazy, but then, you know, you think, you discuss, you modify, and you go for it. And you know, very often it works.
So you've learned a lot from, you know, 2 ex-international football stars in that sense.
I believe you learn a lot every day, as long as you're open-minded, and especially when you step into a different geography, a different territory. I feel I had to spend much more time listening and learning than talking.
Kind of relearning a bit, because it's a new territory.
It's new territory, it's new people, it's a different culture. There's a slightly, It's not a massively different way of doing things, okay, but there are nuances which you have to get used to, which you have to adapt.
Specific to the UK, you think? Or?
Even specific to the UK.
Like, for example?
Like the way you say things.
Okay.
Even when you're dealing with team members.
Okay.
Maltese are thicker skinned, I find. Mm-hmm. Not maybe because it's Maltese to Maltese.
Right.
In the UK, you have to be a little bit more careful.
I know you offend. It's easier to offend.
You can very, very easily offend. So you have to be careful. The laws are slightly different. So you just need to be aware.
Mm-hmm.
You need to take the time to learn. Right. You need to take the time to listen. Then you still have to act, and you still have to take decisions, and you still have to move forward. But the sensitivity to the culture, the sensitivity to the geography has to be there. At the end of the day, my strong belief is that, you know, if as long as you treat people in a way that you want to be treated yourself, then you can get along irrespective of whether you're in Malta or in England or in China or in Africa, wherever. I think people want to be treated well.
Exactly.
And if you treat people respectfully, you know, if you go into the, in my case, into the hotels, what does it cost to say good morning and smile and ask how people are? It takes nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It takes nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes a massive difference. And that could be with any nationality in the world.
Course,
everyone
it's
likes...
It's human nature.
Human nature. Everyone likes to be
culture.
Acknowledged. Everyone likes to be respected. Mm-hmm. Everyone likes to feel he's playing a part in the success
of
the hotel or the company, you know. Like I said, who are the most important people in the stock exchange in Manchester? As if not me, it's not Gary. The most important people are the team delivering
the guest
that
would meet
guest
on a
experience
daily basis.
Mm-hmm. Every day. They are the ones who make the difference. They are the ones who ultimately form the reputation of the company. You can create the structure of the culture through your own behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a culture. You know, I've seen many vision statements, mission statements.
Textbook.
You know, we've put our own together. But ultimately, irrespective of what you have written down on paper, it's how you behave with your
team. How you live it on a daily basis.
And how you live it on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can have anything written down on a vision or a mission or on objectives, whatever. The reality is, if you don't go in and look after people and treat people as you would like to be treated yourself.
Exactly. What do you do, you know, in your personal life to kind of be really, you know, prepared to take major decisions? I know you're into sport, for example.
Sport is a big thing for me. And today,
how?
The first thing I do every day is go running or cycling, the occasional swim, but running is my main zvok, as we would say in Maltese. My outlet, my letting off steam. But more than that, positively, it clears my head and it prepares me for the day. To the extent that even when I went to have a chat with Gary a couple of years ago, I said, look, my routine starts with a run. He said, the last thing I would want is for you to change that.
So you made that very clear.
And that's hugely important for me.
Mm-hmm.
It enables me to start the day off much more energetically, much clearer. And I spend between 2 and 3 hours a day. On the personal side, yes, we had my young cousin's tragedy a few years ago now, 6 years ago, coming up to 7. It affects you in a big way. But I guess, you know, when you step back, the biggest effect is that you realize how fragile life can be. You appreciate more of what you have. You appreciate time more. I think you try and do more with your time.
Okay.
You appreciate your family more.
Exactly.
You know, because of me, I took the decision. It wasn't because of the company. But because of the way we worked, I was distant to my family for many hours in the day. My wife brought up the kids. I was present, but I can't really take
as much
credit
like
for bringing them up. And it's a trade-off. Would I do it in the same way again? I'm not sure. You know, hand on heart, I'm not sure. And when you go through something like that, you know, my uncle a million times more, you get an immediate realization of how fragile things can be and how they can change at the drop of a hat. Yeah. So I think you appreciate more, you think about things a little bit more deeply, but then again, you can't go too deep every time because you stop.
Exactly. What would be your, two, three, words of advice, basic principles you've learned that you would want to share with us?
Look, I think I don't like giving advice. I prefer to say, from my experience.
Yes, exactly.
I think what is important is to make sure that before you step into a new geography, you are absolutely clear of what you are trying to achieve, what you are offering, and making sure what you are offering is something that is more what we call blue ocean instead of red ocean. You can't just go into a new territory doing what everyone else is doing at the same price point in the same way, because where's the value offering if you're doing that? You have to be offering something that is seen as value added to the market. So you need to know the market you're going in, you need to know the product you're going in well, you need to take the time to learn about the geography, you need to take the time to learn about the people. But then once you've done that, once you're clear on that, go for it, and go for it all out in a relentless way, in a passionate way. And with conviction, you can't go in for, but what if this, what if that? If you don't have that conviction, don't do it.
Exactly.
So do the preparatory work, have the conviction, and then just go for it.
Absolutely. Listen, with those wise words, we'll have to really, really wrap up because this has been really, really fruitful, really, kind of even more interesting than we expected. So thank you, Winston, for finding time to do this.
In this series, we talk to experts and entrepreneurs on leadership and management issues. We have episodes on emerging out of a crisis, driving innovation, the digital imperative, attracting talent, seizing key opportunities, and the leadership lessons we can learn from the world of sport. The series also includes 4 interviews with international entrepreneurs based in Malta. International Insight was originally recorded for Trade Malta and made possible thanks to HSBC.